From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. Laura Sims is the critically acclaimed author of the novel Looker, which is now in development for television. And we're lucky enough to have her join us today to talk about her much-anticipated new book, How Can I Help You? Laura, what a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so give us a brief synopsis of this new book.
Okay, great. How Can I Help You is about two local librarians, one of whom, Margot, is a former nurse with a trail of suspicious patient deaths in her past. She came to the library 2 years ago to kind of turn over a new leaf and quell her urges. And she's been doing well until Patricia shows up. And Patricia is the new reference librarian. And she also has a past, not quite so dark, but she is a writer. And she feels like she's a failed writer because she couldn't sell a novel that she wrote. So she's decided to put writing behind her and just be a reference librarian. But as soon as she meets Margot, that changes. She senses something in her. The two women are drawn together, and soon their lives become dangerously intertwined.
So my understanding is that you actually, for a time, worked at your local library. So is that part? Oh, in high school you did. So is that partly what inspired this book?
Yes, definitely. And not in high school. Sorry. I work there now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I've been working at my local library part-time for about 3 or 4 years. So, and it definitely inspired this book. I was working during the pandemic. We were one of the few places that was open. And I don't know. I really immersed myself, maybe because there wasn't much else going on in any of our lives. I loved going to work. I loved being there. It was a place where I could see other human beings.
Yeah.
And I also really wanted to show the library, the public library, as it is today. I think that's something we don't often see. In books and films, we see this like romanticized version of it, but not the reality. So I wanted to show that.
Okay. So can we talk a little bit about that? Because I have to say, my husband has such an affinity for libraries. I mean, like grew up going to the local library, you know, in Boise. I mean, we take our kids to the library. It's a real thing in our family. And I think part of it is we all love to read and all of that.
Right.
And you know, it's supposed to be this really welcoming place, which I think it is. Yet I was reading that, you know, you've said part of the reality of libraries today is it's almost a place of refuge for the more marginalized folks in our community. So when you say, like, let's talk about the library now, is that kind of what you're referencing?
Yes, definitely. I think people don't quite realize, you know, when we think of the library, it's as this silent, sacred book vault with the librarian and her reading glasses shushing people. But really, it's become a community center and, you know, it welcomes everyone. And yes, marginalized people are drawn to the library because a lot of them were left behind by the digital revolution. A lot of people don't have computers at home. The library has become, I think, one of the last public places for the homeless, the mentally ill. So, you know, it is a place where absolutely everyone is welcome. And I wanted to capture that in the book.
You know, that's so interesting when you say that, you know, so many folks were left behind with the digital age. And I think that's something that so many of us tend to forget, right? Because so many folks, like you have, you know, your phone is a computer, basically, right? Yet so many people don't have access to that. And that really is what our local libraries give to people.
Yeah. And it's such a crucial piece of being alive right now. you can't really function without, if you want a job, if you want healthcare, if you want a house, you know, you need to use the internet. And so, yes, people come to the library just for that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because when I think back when I was a kid, it is that I kind of feel that ominous presence of a library, right? Where it is that librarian shushing you and you have to be quiet and all of this, right? And it's, I mean, and now it, when I walk into a library, yes, it's quiet, but it's also like, I mean, our libraries have like kids areas with these play areas. And so there's always something going on. There's always activity going on. And I've never thought of it as a community center. But you're so right. I think that's what local public libraries have really evolved to become.
Yes, I think so. And I think it was partially conscious on libraries' part to survive, mm-hmm. you know, because of all of the various places where you can find books and other materials. Libraries can't just be that. So they have evolved to become this place where people can gather and do fun things, you know, makers mm-hmm. events and all kinds of things.
Oh yeah. I know when a new local branch of the library opened here, it was a big deal a couple of years ago was they got a 3D printer, right? And so you could sign up to use the 3D printer.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So it's just neat to see that involvement. Okay. Getting back to the book. I'm so curious. So you've written two suspense novels. When you get ready to sit down and write, do you already know like the twists and the turns and even how the ending will be? Or does that, you know, does it kind of unfold as you're writing and getting to know these characters?
It definitely unfolds. I've tried to write. When I was first starting to write fiction, I tried to write a couple of young adult novels. Those are, you know, will not see the light of day. But I did try to outline before I sat down to really write. And I think it killed the books. I think it takes out that, you know, as I'm writing, and I think with a lot of writers say this, as you're writing, things happen that you don't expect. Characters do things that you don't know they're going to do. And you have to leave that room for things to happen so that the book feels alive and real when someone's reading it. Otherwise, I think it can get too stale. Although I know some writers use outlines very successfully. I just can't do it.
So with this book, did you at least have an idea of who Margot and Patricia were, or even Margot's past? I mean, did you have kind of that nugget? And then from there, it was like, okay, who are they going to become? How will their lives intertwine?
Yes, definitely. I generally write from a voice, and that's how Looker came to me. And Margot was that voice at first. So I definitely had that. I had listened to this podcast episode years before about Jane Toppin, who was a serial killer nurse in the 1800s.
Oh,
and
geez.
She's totally fascinating. And I just kind of tucked her in my brain for later. And she really influenced my Margot. She's not exactly the same, but I love this contrast in her personality between this, you know, cheerful demeanor and then the dark things mm-hmm. that she does. So that was where I started. Patricia came in later. I think I had Margot, I had the library. Those were my key mm-hmm. elements. And then I realized at some point that I needed something more, like I needed a foil for her. And Patricia became that foil. And of course, she's a writer and there's a lot of me in her. So that was, you know, not too much me in her, but quite a bit of me and my experiences as a writer I used for her.
And then you also then at that point write in two different voices. I mean, what was that like for you to take that approach in this book?
It was fun. It was a new challenge for me since Looker's told from one perspective. So it was a challenge, but a good one, and also kind of kept it interesting for me. in writing it because I could switch back and forth, and it just made it more interesting. And I just loved putting, I loved putting this former serial killer and the writer together and like have them collide. That was really fun.
Yeah. What was it like to write this book after having had such success with Looker?
It was hard. It was a long journey to this book. I actually had another second novel that I wrote in between Looker and this one that I could not publish, that I didn't sell. And so that I poured a lot of that bitterness over that experience into Patricia. So it actually worked out really beautifully because I'm very happy that I got to use that for Patricia. But yeah, it was kind of a hard road. Like the experience with my first book was overwhelming and I really caught up in it, as you do. Mm-hmm. So it was hard to go into another project with confidence. And so it took me a while to get to this book, but I knew it was right the moment I started writing it.
Well, I think too, there would be such pressure, right? And not just on you, not the pressure just that you put on yourself, but almost the pressure from, right, from publishers, from editors, even probably from readers that okay, you did this once, let's do it again. It would seem that that could be really overwhelming.
Yes, it is. And the book that I didn't sell was a departure from Looker. And I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but there's definitely, as soon as you publish a book, you just have these voices in your head of, yes, readers, you're my agent, editor, all of that. And that's something that you don't have to deal with when you're writing your first novel, because you don't have these people surrounding you. So it was definitely a lot of pressure.
And are you proud of this new book?
I am. I'm so proud of it and really enjoyed myself. I had a friend, a really good writer friend, who during the time between not selling that second novel and this one told me, just in so many words, I won't use the exact words she said because I don't write for public radio, but
yeah,
she basically said, block everything and everyone out and have fun. And I put it up on my laptop on a little post-it note. And I did. I just wrote what I wanted to, which is, basically what I always do. But I really tried to just do it for myself and try to block out the noise. And it worked. It helped a lot.
I love that because that's just good life advice.
It really is. It really is. If you're doing things for someone else to please someone else, it generally does not turn out well.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So before I let you go, what do you hope people take away from this read? I think just, one thing is just opening people's eyes to what a library is, yes, today. But what else are you hoping?
I mean, I love exploring. I feel like in our society, we have these very rigid distinctions between bad people and good people. And we consider ourselves good people who do good things and could never imagine, right, being someone who does wrong. And I always like in this book and in Looker, I like to play with that line and blur it a bit so that it makes, and this may not be a good thing, but to make a reader feel kind of uncomfortable with those easy assignations of, good and bad, right and wrong, and maybe think about that a bit more and about, how complex humans are. I just really like exploring the dark side of humanity because I think it tells us a lot about human beings and who we are.
Yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely. Laura, it was such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day.
Of course, it was wonderful.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.